stop it now. I mean it.
Anybody want a peanut?
So this is the fifth in our series on raising a nonviolent or a non-aggressive family. We messed up in the beginning. We named it nonviolent as the file name.
Right.
But we actually intended it to be non-aggressive.
Right.
And so we have to give the disclaimer at every single beginning. But this is number five in the series of raising a non-aggressive family. And I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
Kai is my daughter. We are, to my knowledge, the only anarchist father-daughter podcasting slash radio team in the podcastosphere. What would you call it? Podcast a sphere?
I have no idea.
Internetotopia? But we're notorious about staying on topic.
Yes, absolutely. We have very carefully written notes, and we have lines written down.
It's all scripted.
Yeah, everything's scripted.
100% scripted. We work hundreds of hours to script 1 hour of what sounds like complete random nonsense, and everything we just said is a lie.
And then we crumple up our notes and burn them.
Yeah. Because we don't want the man getting our notes. Okay, so I started to say, so to be serious about this, but like, have we had a serious podcast?
I think the Armadillo podcast was pretty serious.
Yeah, and the brain damage podcast.
Yeah, yeah, and the spiders from Mars. That was a very serious topic.
Alien.
Space mutant alien overlord or something like that.
That was actually maybe one of our most serious ones. Okay, but this is number five in the series on raising a non-aggressive family. And what we hope to touch on today is the latter teen years, the relationship in those awkward times when really, you know, no matter that the individual may be listed by the government as being a child,
mm-hmm.
when you get a lot of people, and it's different, you know, some mm-hmm. some people are still very childish when they're 40, 50 years old.
Right.
And some are very mature when they're 9. But when you get a person who is 15 to 18, 19 years old, you really need to realize that in no matter that they may not be fully the size or, you know, whatever that they're going to be, you're dealing with mostly an adult there.
Mm-hmm.
And a very frustrated adult who's trapped inside of a child's world mm-hmm. because all of our society has said, no, you're still a child.
And actually, I would like to point out that this frustration is compounded when all of the people that person is associating with are that age.
Yeah, it really is.
Because that's completely unnatural.
This is something, let me throw this in, because this is a real advantage I had growing up. When I was 12, my dad had a construction company. And I wanted really badly to go and work with the men in the construction company. But of course, I would have been horribly in the way. And
right.
Plus, it's illegal.
But mostly, it's because you would have been in the way.
I would have been in the way. By the summer, when I was 13, I had grown physically to the size of where I was probably close to the average size of a man when I was, by the summer, I was 13. That means I was almost 14.
Mm-hmm.
So by that summer, I was almost the size of the average man.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fairly muscular. So I was pushing really hard for my dad to let me help. Now, I had helped at the shop. I would go in the evenings, and I would sweep the floors, and I'd do things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad would give me a dollar here or there, $5 or whatever. And this is back when, you know, dollars were actual units of money.
When they meant something.
But I really wanted to go and earn. And, you know, part of it was I wanted to be doing that cool stuff, like running those ditch diggers and mm-hmm. backhoes and dump trucks and things. But I knew realistically that I couldn't do that kind of stuff. Although I could, I had driven all those equipment, you know, bulldozers and stuff. I could drive all those things when I was
right.
12, 13 years old. But I knew that my dad couldn't afford to allow me to do that on the job site.
Right.
For the liability reasons and so forth. But I wanted to be there and be part of that. But the real reason I wanted to be a part of that is because I wanted a mini bike. And the way to get a mini bike is to earn a bunch of money working with right. the men, because that's where the money's at, and then buy a mini bike.
Right.
So this was all about me wanting a mini bike.
Right.
So I wanted, so at 13 that summer, I wanted to work with the men. And my dad finally said, okay, fine. Here's the deal. You can come on the job site with us. You can work. I'm not going to pay you what I would pay these men.
Right.
Because, you know, I can depend on them. Mm-hmm. I know what their abilities are. And I, you know, you're a 13-year-old kid.
Right.
And here's the other thing. My dad saw it as, if I'm employing you, then that means I'm not employing a man.
Right. Who has a family and...
Yeah. Who's supporting a family and who I know can do a man's day's work.
Right.
And you're only 13. So, and here's the other thing. All the rest of the men on my crew know that you're my son mm-hmm. and that I'm giving you this job rather than some other man.
Right.
So if they see you, me, if they see you, you know, slacking off or not pulling your load, mm-hmm. then they're going to have a lowered opinion of me as their boss because
right.
I'm allowing my son to get away with what I would never let somebody else get away with.
Right.
And the last thing was I'm never going to get paid what they're going to get paid.
Right.
Because I'm a 13-year-old kid.
Right.
Now, so I went to work.
Well, and you're not physically able to do the work that they're able to do.
That's, my dad thought that. But when I hit the job site, I understood the standard that my dad had laid out for me. And so I made sure that not only did I keep up with the men, but at times I embarrassed them. I went a little further, carried a little bit more than they carried, pushed myself a little further. I didn't have the knowledge and the base of skills that they had, mm-hmm. but I made it up for it in enthusiasm. If I had to get from point A to point B to grab whatever tool or pick up something, I would do it quickly, either at a run or some level of urgency to mm-hmm. get the job done when everybody else was just pacing themselves. And if everybody else was... Now, this is in the hot Kentucky summers of eastern Kentucky. So we're talking, you know, 80, 90% humidity and 80, 90, 95 degree temperature. Mm-hmm. If the other guys were sweating a little bit, then I needed to be sweating twice as bad as them in order to make sure that my dad knew that I was earning the money and mm-hmm. to make sure that the whole rest of the crew knew that I was earning the money. Mm-hmm. And then I could feel justified in accepting the money from my dad and I could buy whatever it was that I wanted.
Right. But, you know, you had to do that because your dad wasn't going to buy you a mini bike.
Oh, yeah. No, there was no way he's not going to spend money on something like that. And it wasn't that we weren't that poor or anything. I mean, we weren't rich.
Right.
But, you know, he had a brand new state-of-the-art motorhome. Mm-hmm. We had a nice 5 acres, two-story house. We had a new, brand new, a Ditchwitch, big Ditchwitch trencher that he had just purchased. We had all the other equipment that was in the company. We had, you know, several pickup trucks plus a car for my mom. And we, you know, we were doing well. We weren't mm-hmm. rich, but we were doing well. But to buy unnecessary luxury items mm-hmm. just to give to the kids, my dad would never have done that under any circumstance.
Which I think is funny because now you're almost looked at like you're a child abuser if you don't give your kid a cell phone and a laptop and you know, you're looked at like, you know.
Now, I fell into a horrible trap there in my little rant.
The uphill both ways
yeah.
rant?
Yeah, I used the uphill both ways in the snow argument, and that's not really all that effective to young people who hear that argument. They just say, you know, well, Dad's lying.
Right.
There was no snow.
Right. But the fact of the matter is you have to teach children that if you want something, you have to work for it.
Right.
And this goes both ways. If you make them work and you don't give them intrinsic value on that work, mm-hmm. they resent that work because right. they feel they're getting nothing from it.
Right.
So if you have a situation where you have your kid do chores
mm-hmm. and no reward for it,
and then you also give them, you know, whatever it is they want, mm-hmm. iPods, free toys, stuff like that. Uh-huh. And there's no connection mm-hmm. that those two things, you know, there's no, if you do these chores like this, mm-hmm. this is your payment for that. Mm-hmm. There's only the feeling that they're working for nothing.
Well, we talk a lot on this podcast about the difference between capitalism and socialism. And we talk about a lot about how a lot of times people don't realize that the very system that they're supporting is socialism.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you take one of the aspects of true socialism, a perfect socialism that people like Engels and Marx wrote about, they eliminate money entirely mm-hmm. from society. That's one of the goals of true socialism. And that's kind of what parents teach their children when they have them do chores and they give them free junk stuff, mm-hmm. games, computers, phones, all these fancy things, and there's no connection between their labor and their reward.
Mm-hmm.
You get all these fancy things because we love you, or mm-hmm. because you deserve it, because you are, because you exist, because you're our little snowflake. So we buy all these expensive things and lavish them upon you. And we want you to clean your room and do these all these chores too, but there's no connection between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have any true ownership. You're just somebody who's getting free handouts from the government, and then you're forced to work this government job.
Right.
But there's no pay. There's nothing connecting.
Right.
Nothing connecting the two. So you eliminate the capitalistic, the market forces that drive a capitalist economy, and you've embraced socialism when mm-hmm. you do that.
and it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't, because you destroy the price mechanism, and the value of the laptop or cell phone or you know, electronic games or whatever, the value of those to the child becomes zero.
Yeah.
And the value of working becomes a negative. The child doesn't look at working as an opportunity to make money.
Mm-hmm.
They look at working as unfair. Mm-hmm. I have to do this. And this is one of the great arguments the economists talk about with socialism. The question that the economist has to ask to the socialist is, who's going to take out the trash?
Mm-hmm.
And under the socialist utopia, we're taught to believe by the socialists that the new socialist man will want to be the trash collector.
Mm-hmm.
And the next guy over who is the plumber will want to be the plumber. And the next guy who's the electrician will want to be the electrician. And the doctor will want to be the doctor. And all these people will recognize their place in society and they will want to fulfill them. But that's just socialist blather.
Mm-hmm.
That's not in any way related to human activity.
No.
In fact, nobody wants to take out the trash. Nobody wants to clean up their room. Nobody wants to do the dishes. So capitalism provides that motivation
mm-hmm.
and rewards the behavior with goods and services.
Mm-hmm.
So if you utilize capitalism in a family, then you actually encourage work. You don't make work the burden, which becomes almost like a punishment to kids.
It does. It absolutely does. And it's funny. You have to look at, what are you teaching your child when you have them do chores? And there are several things that you're teaching them. One, you're teaching them these valuable life skills.
Mm-hmm.
Because at some point in the future, they're going to be living on their own, and they're going to need to do dishes.
Right.
So you need to teach them how to do dishes. But more than that, you're teaching them how to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
You're teaching them how to have a responsibility. You're teaching them how to do a task completely and do it well. And you need to be teaching them that working comes with a reward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as a 5-year-old, as a 6-year-old, as a 10-year-old, as a 15-year-old, the reward for them mm-hmm. is not having a clean room.
Right.
They don't care if there's a clean room.
Right.
They don't care if there's clean dishes.
Right.
They don't care.
Right.
So that's not a reward mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
But having a weekly allowance is a reward mechanism.
Now, there's a flip side to this, too. If you're going to say okay, let's say if money doesn't work out for you as a way to reward your children.
And some kids it doesn't work.
Yeah. If that's the case, or if you work out some other kind of different thing, you say, mm-hmm. okay, you want a cell phone? Here's what you have to do to have a cell phone. You have to, you know, take out the garbage every time. You have to do this. You have to do X, Y, and Z. And if you do that on a consistent basis, then you get a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Then here's the thing about the cell phone. It belongs to them.
Yeah.
It's not your cell phone that you're letting them have as a reward for their... No, they have earned it. It's theirs. It's just like if you went to your work. I don't know. You know what a person does for a living. Let's say they... let's say they work in an office and they work in IT in an office.
Mm-hmm.
So every day they go to their office, they go to their little cubicle, they sit down, they fire up their computer, they start taking emails, they start doing all the stuff that they do. And however it is that they get paid for that work, it might be an automatic deposit, or it might be the boss comes around and hands out checks, or however, mm-hmm. however your employer does this. Could you imagine your employer one day coming up to your cubicle, walking up to your desk and saying, oh, you know, Bill, say, Bill, you know.
We didn't approve of your performance in last week's meeting. Can you give us that money back?
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and write me a check for the last 2 months' salary that we gave you? Because we've looked at your performance and we really don't like the way you're doing this and this and this. And why don't you just go ahead and,
Or we're going to make you work for the next 2 months, but we're not going to pay you.
Yeah, or we're going to ground you. That's what we're going to do. We're going to ground you. So you have to do your work, but you can't have a chair to sit in.
Mm-hmm.
The company's no longer going to furnish you a chair.
Right.
I mean, this is the kind of psychotic behavior that creates an employee who's hates his employer.
Right.
Well, if you do the same thing to your teenage child, then you're presenting the same, you're doing the same thing. You're headed for the same results.
I guess we should bring it up. The kind of the motivation for this particular podcast was this viral video that's going around the internet.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of people really think this is the YouTube video with the dad with his cigarette and his cowboy hat and his 45 automatic, and he's going to teach his daughter how to behave by shooting his computer that he bought and paid for and then gave to her and then took away from her, you know. And there's so many people that are impressed by this. They're like, oh yeah, stand up to them kids.
Or there's people who completely miss the point entirely and go, oh, he's so violent, he has a gun.
Yeah. All they see is the gun.
Yeah.
And they think, oh, he's crazy because he has a gun. No.
Yeah, that's not the point at all. And it got me because when the video first popped up all over my Facebook page, I kind of just ignored it. And then I couldn't help but see people's response to it. And even before I had watched the video, I spotted the great hypocrisy in it that nobody seemed to be talking about. You know, there was the, that's right, you got to teach your kid not to be spoiled. Or there was the, he has a gun.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody was saying he doesn't want his kid to have a temper tantrum on the internet. And so to teach her to not have a temper tantrum on the internet, he's going to have a temper tantrum on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, that was, to me, great neon sign flashing, hypocrite, hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, if your kid is throwing a temper tantrum in the aisle of the supermarket because they want a candy,
mm-hmm.
your response should not be to get on the ground and throw a temper tantrum because they're throwing a temper tantrum.
And that's kind of what he did. He was upset because she complained about him on Facebook. So he's going to go on YouTube and complain about her.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, she thought he would never see it because she had blocked him on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And then he destroys her computer and says, you'll never see this because it's on Facebook and you won't have a computer.
Right.
Like, she'll never have access to a computer like, again.
In the year 2012, you can keep your 15-year-old from accessing a computer.
Yeah, that's a nice little fantasy world Mr. Tough Guy lives in.
Yeah, in what world can she not grab somebody else's phone and check her Facebook?
Yeah, well, that's probably what he didn't think of, is that her phone probably
can, yeah,
she can probably watch YouTube on her phone.
Yeah. I have not a great phone, and I can watch YouTube on my phone. Mm-hmm. I can access Facebook on my phone.
Not only that, once it gets out, it's assuming it doesn't even go viral, because I think it was his intention to make a viral. Mm-hmm. But even if it doesn't go viral, if it gets back to her friends, they're all going to be showing it to her.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And here's the thing.
And he posted it on her Facebook.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. He did. He hacked into her account and put the link on her Facebook. So all her friends are going to get it. Now, here's the thing with all her friends. Her friends are not going to go, wow, your dad is so wise.
No, they're going to go,
I see what you mean. Your dad's a jerk.
Yeah, he's a nut job.
Yeah.
So he's proving her point.
Yeah.
And her point in her entire Facebook rant was that she didn't appreciate the fact that she had to do all of these chores. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't getting paid for it.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I give you everything you want, and you don't want to get a job.
I've created this perfect socialist utopia for you where I hand you everything you want, and I just ask you to do the worst jobs in the house for me. Well, nobody else does those jobs.
Right.
You know, here's the underlying little thing. I'll say it so that you don't have to. Here's the underlying little message that comes through to me in that. It's like, what exactly were these jobs? Well, these all women's work anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't they?
Yeah.
Isn't that right, Mr. Cowboy Hat and Cigarette?
They were, you know, they weren't changing the oil in the car. They weren't mowing the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
They were women's work.
Yeah. Now, and I've attacked him a couple times on his imagery there. I need to point this out. The other day I did a podcast scrutinizing a guy from the Netherlands, a soldier from the Netherlands, who mm-hmm. gives this pro-state, pro-dominance speech that is just really buttery to all those leftists mm-hmm. out there who want a big, powerful state to lord over everybody, and they want gun control for everybody except the state. And in his little rant that he does there on the TED Talks thing, one of the tricks that he does is an old propaganda trick. He has a modern rifle that's brought on by a soldier, and then he walks around and waves it around the whole
way. Female soldier.
Yeah. And he brings this thing on, and he walks around with it, constantly waving it in front of the audience as he's speaking. And my comment was that what he's doing, this is a propaganda tool.
Mm-hmm.
What he's doing is the same as a magician does by waving his hands around, or by waving a cloth, mm-hmm. or by having a scantily clad assistant,
mm-hmm.
or by having smoke pop up all of a sudden, or a bang sound of some kind.
Yep.
Or it's also the other cheap stage magician trick of having some object that you wave in front of the audience to almost mesmerize them while you're telling them, you know, how you want them. So mm-hmm. so it's like, you watch this, keep watching this object, watch mm-hmm. this object, watch this. You're beginning to relax. Now yep. you're a chicken.
Yeah.
And so before you realize it, you're clucking around on the stage because this clown was waving around some object that took your attention. Well, that's exactly what this guy does in this video. He's got all these imagery that are whether he realizes it or not, he's probably not bright enough to understand this. But he brought on this imagery specifically to make his video appeal to a particular aspect mm-hmm. of his audience. The cowboy hat, the cigarette, and the pistol.
Mm-hmm.
And it's specifically a type of pistol that's real appealing to a very narrow segment that's mm-hmm. most likely to be swinging that cigarette around, wearing your cowboy hat, and being all, mm-hmm. you know, look at me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm not attacking any particular type of pistol because I don't want to get into that debate, but...
Well, but I feel like it's very, you know, to me, it was just big man with a pistol wants to prove that he's dominant over his daughter. Well, that's a great way to have your daughter turn 18, leave the house, and never talk to you again.
Yeah.
You know, is that what you really want? Is that your goal?
Well, and she kind of offered that in her little rant on mm-hmm. Facebook. She says, you know, just think about what it's going to be like when you get old.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
think about it.
Dad, you'd really need to think about that. Because, you know, the father-daughter relationship or the child-parent relationship begins mm-hmm. with the parent changing the diaper and serving all the needs of a completely helpless baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends, if it's done properly, it ends with the parent in that fully
dependent.
Yeah, dependent and helpless position with the child taking care of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not bad. I mean, that's nature. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Yep.
But that's also the motivation for the parent to treat that child well, not only when it's that baby, but all that time, even once it becomes an adult.
Mm-hmm.
If the parent wants to live their last few years alone, neglected, and taken care of by strangers, then yeah, treat your kids like crap.
Yeah.
But if you want to live your final years enjoying an extended family and knowing that you're going to be taken care of,
mm-hmm.
then you need to treat even the late teenagers, you need to treat them as an equal. Not mm-hmm. you can still be, you know, the boss or whatever, but you have to treat them as human beings and as you know, people on an equal level.
Mm-hmm.
You can't lord over them and expect them to love you and help you when you age.
No, that's that kind of behavior breeds resentment. Mm-hmm. It breeds, you know, I'm just going to leave then.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need this.
Yeah.
Maybe that's his, you know, maybe he thinks that he's trying to raise her to be independent or whatever by pushing her away, but that's not.
It seemed to me more like he just wanted her to be subservient.
That's
like, I'm the boss.
Yeah.
I'm the dad because I'm the dad and I'm the boss and you ought to recognize my great authority.
Which, you know? I actually find that with some libertarians, they want to raise their kids like that, and then they want their kids not to be
dependent on the government.
But I mean, you can't do that. You can't say only bow down to my authority,
mm-hmm.
but no one else's.
Yeah,
you know, if you instill in your kids the idea that you shouldn't bow down to authority just because somebody has authority,
mm-hmm.
then hey, guess what? They're going to put that against you too.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, now we're talking hypocrisy, and this is another aspect of that. We've already given that video more mm-hmm. time than it's worth, but one other aspect of the hypocrisy of this clown in the video is that he starts off with a profanity-laced video,
mm-hmm.
and then he starts reading her stuff, which is profanity-laced,
mm-hmm.
and then he gets close to the end of the video, and he starts complaining about her profanity usage,
mm-hmm.
and he almost, if you really look at it, he struggles not to use profanities when he's describing his daughter using profanities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the height of hypocrisy. If, first off, here's reality. Kids are going to use bad language when they're among their peers
mm-hmm.
because it makes them feel like they're big.
They're going
like
to use the language of their peers.
Yeah. And if you want your kids to grow up using non-profanities, then you need to not just don't use profanities in front of them. You need to live that life and don't mm-hmm. use profanities. If you use profanities among your peers as an adult, and then you think you're going to get away with fooling your kids, it's going to come back and get you.
Mm-hmm.
So either...
Well, it's the same thing as, you know, I'm going to make you eat your vegetables, but I'm not going to eat my vegetables.
Yeah.
So your kids are smarter than that.
Yeah. So really and truly, here's what it boils down to. Is using profanities in speech, now, and this is a rhetorical question.
Good, because our listeners can't actually answer back right now.
Oh, that's right. So, do you believe, little Socratic method here, do you believe that it's bad for a person to use profanities in their normal speech? If you answer yes, it's bad, then the next question would be, do you use profanities in your normal speech? And if you say yes, then you just contradicted what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
If you say no, you do not use profanities, then the best way to get your kids not to use profanities is just live your life and don't use profanities.
Mm-hmm.
If, on the other hand, you say, well, I'm an adult, I can use whatever language I want, and then you try to put a different standard on your child,
mm-hmm.
That's called hypocrisy.
And
they see it. They will see it.
And the best way to raise a child is to, especially in those teenage years, is to expect
mm-hmm.
adult behaviors from them.
They're going
to
try.
And move them yeah. towards those adult behaviors.
Yeah, they're going to test the waters of everything they can.
If you treat them like a child and you expect them to be a child,
mm-hmm.
then they're going to be a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're never going, they are going to reach for the goals and the aspirations that you set before them.
Right.
You know, and if you want to push them to be an adult, mm-hmm. then you have to have those standards for them.
And leadership has been often referred to as, it's been compared to a rope.
Mm-hmm.
You can't push a rope.
Mm-hmm.
You have to lead a rope. You have to pull a rope.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it is with children. You can't push children to be in anything other than a big old pile of mess. But if you lead them, and you have to lead by example.
Mm-hmm.
So if you lead them, then you're pulling them along with you. You're not trying to force them by pushing them into a path that you yourself are not walking.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to beat this guy up for anything else? You know, if the dude, if he had really wanted to dramatize, first off, he lied.
Mm-hmm.
There are no exploding.
Yeah, he says that they're exploding hollow point bullets.
Yeah. That's a lie, and the gun community should hear that kind of nonsense and immediately call him out on it,
mm-hmm.
because liberals and leftists and those wackos on that side hear that kind of nonsense, and they believe it.
Mm-hmm.
They believe that there are when bullets that explode.
When you can quite clearly look at what happens when the bullet hits the laptop and it does
right
not
through
explode.
It and pounds into the dirt below it. It didn't explode.
And well, and that's the great thing. You know, this guy chooses the act of shooting it with a gun
mm-hmm.
for a specific reason. And that's
for drama.
For drama, yeah. To say, I'm a big man with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
Not because the gun is the most useful thing to destroy a laptop, because it's not.
Yeah.
A baseball bat would have been way more effective in destroying that laptop.
Or a hatchet.
Or a hatchet. A hatchet works.
Cool.
An axe.
Powered that dude up and went after it with an axe. That would have been cool.
Yeah.
A shotgun blast.
Yeah.
If you're going to use a gun. Then load up a double-aught buck. No, don't even do that. Use birdshot.
Yeah.
Use birdshot so you get a nice open pattern and just, you know.
Open it up so you can see the glass.
Yeah, if you're going to do it for the drama.
Not that they use glass, but.
Yeah, but the face of the.
Right.
Yeah. And so you see when the birdshot hits all those little letters and numbers
mm-hmm.
on the keyboard. As it goes splattering off in every direction. See, that would have been, he didn't really think of his drama, but he wasn't shooting for really the drama of the shooting it. He was, by using the 1911 pistol that he used, he was going for a specific segment
mm-hmm.
of the redneck audience who is in love with that particular pistol
mm-hmm.
and his cowboy hat and his cigarette mm-hmm. and the whole little imagery that he was creating there.
Mm-hmm. And you're not having any effect other than making your kid really, really mad at you, making your kid's friends really, really mad at you,
mm-hmm.
and looking like a big man in the eyes of the community who are already inclined to think that that's the way to raise a child anyway.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know.
You know, but so, and it's this us and them mentality. It's mm-hmm. this parents versus child, and
yeah.
you have to wage a war against your child, and that is not going to work,
right?
Because your child's going to win,
yeah.
Because at some point or another, your child reaches an age and they leave,
yeah.
And where are you at then?
Yeah,
you know,
what are you going to do when they won't even let you see your grandchildren? And as age continues, and as you begin getting, like I mentioned a minute ago, you begin getting more and more decrepit,
mm-hmm.
and senility starts to set in, and you have no friends, and the family doesn't come around and visit mm-hmm. you, and you die alone.
I look at it, if you had an argument with your spouse, and your spouse
said something bad
against you.
This is excellent. Go ahead.
If your spouse says something bad against you on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Would your response be, you know, you've bought this laptop and you've given it to your spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Is this appropriate to destroy your spouse's
to
property?
To first hack into their account.
Yeah.
Because that's what he admitted to doing.
Yeah.
He hacked into her account, which totally violated any privacy that he should have been respecting. If she wants to go on internet and complain about him, she shouldn't have that right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, human beings have the right to speak,
mm-hmm.
right? Or are we assuming that human beings don't have the right to speak?
Or do you only like one specific property right?
Maybe some slaves can speak and some can't.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you feel about your children, buddy?
Are they only human after they've reached the magic 18-year-old?
Mm-hmm. If so, when you start to drift into senility and they're taking care of you in the home, and you say something that's not right,
mm-hmm.
can they come in and take your Jell-O away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and with children, I always think about it in terms of this is a relationship with another human being.
Exactly. Not and a child, a human being.
And if you wouldn't feel comfortable doing that behavior mm-hmm. to your spouse mm-hmm. or your sibling
or
your friend or your parent,
right.
why would you do it to your child?
Yeah. And now, and this becomes really vividly important when the child starts to wander into the early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, it becomes more obvious that what you're dealing with is an adult.
Mm-hmm.
But if you maintain this idea that you're going to tell them how to do this and they need to listen to you, you know, well, yeah, you probably are more wise than they are. You probably know a lot of things that they don't know. But if you don't let them discover that wisdom on their own,
mm-hmm.
then you're not accomplishing anything by making all the decisions for them.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, when you finally make a bad decision on their behalf and they follow through on your advice
mm-hmm.
and they have to eat that bad decision,
mm-hmm.
that's not going to be pleasant for them, and they're going to lose a lot more trust that they, if they have any trust left in you anyway, after mm-hmm. raising a kid like that.
Yeah. And it's very, I think it's very hard for parents when you see your 20-something-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to tell them, don't do that. Do this. Do this.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Do this.
Because that, you know, from about the age of 16, 17 through about 25, 28,
mm-hmm.
that's the years of really stupid decisions.
Right.
Really, really stupid things that mm-hmm. the kid is going to do at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And stupid things that have far-reaching consequences, you know. Things like racking up lots and lots of credit card debt or... Mm-hmm.
In silly wrecks because they're not paying attention through a stop sign.
Right. Or, you know, getting arrested or getting drunk or... Mm-hmm. Those are the times when the person is inclined to do those kinds of things. And as a parent, you want to say, God, stop it! Mm-hmm. You know? Knock that off! But you have to realize that it's their life.
Right.
You know? And you can't stop them from making those bad decisions, and also you can't rush in and be their white knight to fix the problems,
right.
too.
Right.
You know? Not that you can't be supportive, and, you know, there are problems that, you know, like when my husband and I, we got mm-hmm. off the road and we started looking for work mm-hmm. and we came and lived with you guys.
Yeah.
And
it was a very temporary setting.
And, yeah. And it was supportive, mm-hmm. but it wasn't, let me rush in and fix this.
Right.
You know, you weren't giving us money to have an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't paying for us to get another car.
Nor was I coming in every day and saying, you got that job yet?
Yeah.
Here's an application. Throw an application at you. Here, you looked here. Did you get a job here? Why don't you get up off your butt and get a job? I didn't do any of those things.
Right.
Because I knew that it was actually more important to you
right.
to get on your feet than it was to me.
Because,
mm-hmm. you know, it's your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you have 99% of the motive, and I have 1% of the motive. So, you know, for me to be a jerk about it is not going to make it more pleasant on anybody.
Right. And, you know, that's the thing with jobs in general. Mm-hmm. You cannot force someone to get a job.
Yeah.
If they're not motivated for it,
mm-hmm.
then it's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, and so you have to have them be motivated for it.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, you know, well, when I was a kid, I had jobs and I worked and... good for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not relevant.
Right.
And it doesn't help. It doesn't make the situation better. It doesn't encourage them to get a job. In those years where you're in your 20s, your parent is a mentor. It's no longer they're in charge, they're taking care of you. They're guiding you now.
Right.
And that can be a bit of a tricky relationship to try to move into that stage
mm-hmm.
where they're an elder member of the family.
Mm-hmm.
They're guiding you. They have wisdom.
Yeah.
But they're no longer your guardian, your protector, you're not dependent on them anymore.
Yeah, and a different aspect of this same situation is where the adult child feels so obligated to their parents that the slightest word from the parent becomes law to them. Or like, you know, we were talking about this earlier, I mentioned Moses. It's like all a parent, sometimes, not always, but sometimes the 20, 22, 23-year-old, or even sometimes older than that, all it takes is a word from the parents, and it's like Moses said it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to drop everything because Moses said it. And the parent has to realize the responsibility that comes with their words. And they need to tone down the way that they speak to that child and no longer, you know, bring edicts from on high. And instead, it's like, well, that's, you know, encouragements. And then say, here's to offer this as an alternative if you haven't thought of it. But be very careful in doing that, because the words coming from your lofty position as parent have a long way to fall when they smack that kid in the forehead when they're 22 years old.
And different kids respond to that in different ways. Some kids respond to that in, oh, I have to do that, my mommy said it.
Yeah.
And some kids say, well, I'm not going to do that just because you tell me to.
Right.
And
according to the personality of
whatever personality your kid has, you have to now learn how to give advice without sounding like you're giving order.
Now, since we're in the area of the early 20s, this can be very awkward for siblings, when especially if you have some siblings that are in, let's say, your mid 20s and some are in their early 20s, and maybe some are still in high school or whatever. And they begin to enter a new phase of how to relate to each other, and they still have this authoritarian parents saying, we all need to get along as a family, we all need to do these things together as a family. And yet, in a way, you're kind of not family anymore in that same sense. You're now separate families. You're trying to do your own thing.
Right.
And the parent has the tendency to want to, you know, bring everybody back in again. But what's important to realize is that these siblings who are in their 20s, even though they still have this relationship with each other and they still have a parent's relationship with their parents, they aren't actually under any obligation to treat the other sibling any different than anybody else in their life. It's kind of like what you said a second ago. If you're treating somebody different than you would if they were your spouse or your friend or whatever, just because they're your sibling, then you're setting yourself up for a problem there.
And you as a person do not have to be in an abusive relationship.
Right.
You don't have to be in an abusive relationship if that person is your spouse, if that person is your friend.
Your parent.
If that person is your parent, or if that person's your sibling.
Yeah.
If there is an unhealthy relationship, there's nothing that makes you have to be in that relationship.
Right. If you're 16 years old, And I mean, I hate to say this because parents are going to freak out when I say this, but if you're 16 years old and you're real, not just, oh, you know, I didn't get a new cell phone when the new ones came out this time. My stupid parents are so mean. I didn't get a brand new whatever. not like that. But if you're in an actual abusive relationship and the parent is the abuser, I don't see any. And this is not legally. Legal is a different thing. The state gets involved and messes up the whole process.
Right.
But morally speaking, a teenage kid or any other kid is not under any obligation to stay under the roof of an abusive parent.
No, not at all.
And the same goes for siblings who are, you know, even coming into adulthood, somebody who is, and it doesn't have to be physical abuse.
No.
You have a sibling who's 26 and another sibling who's 22. And the 26-year-old wants to dominate the life of the 22-year-old. You have no obligation to that individual whatsoever. Would you tolerate that from your friends?
No.
Would you tolerate that from a neighbor? Why tolerate it from your brother or your sister?
Yeah.
You know, just don't do it.
Yeah, and you know, you have more motivation, I think, to fix the relationship.
Well, because you have a common friend in the parents.
And if you can fix the relationship, that's great.
Right.
But you're not under any obligation to do so. And sometimes people are not compatible with each other.
Right.
You're not, you know, different personalities don't go well together. And sometimes it's just best. And there doesn't even have to be any animosity. Mm-hmm. You know, you just say, every time we get together, our personalities clash. Mm-hmm. It's better for everybody if we just don't hang out.
And it might be better to come to that position before there is true animosity. Mm-hmm. Because I can speak to this firsthand. When you go years and years under the false impression that you have an obligation to a sibling, and then you finally get to the point of where you say, I have nothing in common with this person. I abhor everything they stand for.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care in the least about my opinion on these things.
Mm-hmm.
They only, this relationship is entirely one way, where I am to be subservient to them and they are to dominate over me.
Mm-hmm.
And if you cut that relationship off early, then you waste years of pain and frustration and building up to a point of where it can get really nasty.
Mm-hmm.
If you can cut it off early enough, you don't have to deal with that.
Yeah.
But if you don't, if you let that thing fester and just get worse and worse.
And because they belong to this same social group,
mm-hmm.
you are going to have to deal with them at some point or another in your mm-hmm. life. Whether that's, you know, weddings, funerals, mm-hmm. family gatherings of any sort,
uh-huh.
there are going to be times when you are in the same vicinity as that person. If you've cut it off early enough to avoid
mm-hmm.
the really all harsh, of those harsh feelings,
right.
then you can be civil
yeah.
and not cause problems for everybody else involved.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't, it becomes very uncomfortable to have to deal with that situation.
And unfair to everybody else in the family.
Yeah.
If you've allowed a situation to fester for years and years to the point of where it erupts, to the point of where two people just absolutely can't stand to be in the same room with each other,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be, or even it might even turn physical or something like that. Well, if you had cut that off years earlier,
mm-hmm.
then it would be a much lighter burden on the rest of the family to realize that, well, Bill and Bob just don't get along.
Yeah.
You know,
and you have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
You have the ability to walk away. You have the ability to say, I'm not going to deal with you anymore.
Yeah.
And not get drawn into arguments and mm-hmm. not get sucked into, you know, okay, they want to send you nasty emails. Just delete them mm-hmm. as soon as you see them in your inbox.
Yeah.
Just delete them.
Or put their name in your spam filter.
Yeah. Or, you know, you see that they're calling on caller ID. Just mm-hmm. don't answer the phone.
Yeah.
You know, it's you have the ability to not engage somebody in mm-hmm. verbal assault.
Yeah. Deny them the opportunity to drag you into something like
mm-hmm.
that. And I might mention that, give a little disclaimer here. All the advice that Kai and I are giving in this series, in the you know, all the way through the whole, it's not because we're perfect human beings.
No, I actually
never made any of these mistakes.
I wanted to bring that up. No one is perfect.
Right.
There's not a perfect libertarian. There's not a perfect anarchist. There's not a perfect anything. Nobody does anything perfectly.
Right. If we did, somebody drag us off and crucify us.
And so you don't have to, don't beat yourself up
right.
if you've made a mistake in raising your children mm-hmm. or you've made a mistake in dealing with your parents or your siblings or anything else. Because, of course, you've made a mistake. You're yeah. a human being.
Yeah, and the same way, if your parents made a mistake with you, well, of course they made a mistake.
Right.
You know, they're humans. So, you know,
you strive to do as good as you can do, mm-hmm. realizing that, you know what, you're going to mess your kids up. You know, all parents do.
Mm-hmm.
There's no person who wasn't given issues.
Mm-hmm.
That you inherit issues from your family.
Yeah, so the thing to do is to not dwell on the mistakes of the past. The thing to do is to learn from the mistakes mm-hmm. of the past and strive to not repeat those mistakes in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're trying to do with these podcasts. It's not because we have the perfect, you know, we have lived the perfect formula our whole lives. And so we have this idyllic, you know, no. We've made tons of mistakes from every direction. And hopefully we learn from those mistakes and improve so that Kai's family won't face the struggles my family and so that my family won't face the struggles that that my parents did, mm-hmm. and their parents, you know, we learn generation after generation. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we just keep the same stupid loops going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're out there shooting somebody's laptop.
And the other thing I think with siblings that I wanted to touch on is that it's hard, I think, for an older sibling to not want to be a surrogate parent to the younger sibling. That's really difficult. But you can't do that.
Right.
You can't run their life. You can't step in and say, you know, you're not doing this right, or you can't do that. You have to let them live their life.
And as age sets in and the siblings start to get older and older, here's something that a lot of older siblings don't want to admit, even when they get really old. When you have a child that's 12
mm-hmm.
and their older sibling that's 14, there's a huge difference between 12 and 14.
Mm-hmm.
When you have one child who's 15 and one that's 16,
mm-hmm.
there's a huge difference between a 15-year-old and a 16. But there's not a whole lot of difference between a 28-year-old and a 36-year-old.
Yeah.
I mean, there's really not.
Well,
there's a difference, but it's not anything like that difference between a 15 and a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
So when you get a 50-year-old and a 62-year-old, the wisdom or knowledge or, you know, ways of the world or mm-hmm. wise, there's no guarantee that the 62-year-old has an advantage over the 50-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the 62-year-old decides that he or she is going to lord over the 50-year-old, what you're just doing is just making a complete idiot of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you don't know what the life experiences have taught that person.
Yeah.
There are 30-year-olds who have experienced enough in life that they have far more wisdom than a 60-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 60-year-olds who are idiots,
mm-hmm.
who have spent their whole life going to work for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, you know, putting in their factory job or putting in their office job day after day, never learning anything new for years.
Mm-hmm.
And they turn 60, 65 years old and they don't have two brain cells that are still functioning and rub against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there are others who are 70 years old and are clear as a bell.
Mm-hmm.
So the age difference that we see when they're children means nothing when they're an adult.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you do with what you have, not how old you are.
And at some point you have to accept the fact that, you know, this little kid that you have spent years watching play with Barbie dolls or whatever
mm-hmm.
is an adult now.
Right.
And they're allowed to do adult things.
And make mistakes,
you know, and you can't try to make them stay a child,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
All that does is make them resent you.
There's a thing.
And not come to you when they make a mistake.
Yeah. There's a thing that it's named in different ways, but one way of looking at it is the diaper and deafness syndrome. What this means is I've changed your diaper, therefore you can't tell me anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, and this can be parent to child, mm-hmm. or this can be sibling to sibling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have, especially if there's been a wide age distance between siblings, or of course there's the age difference between parents and adults. but this idea is that since I've changed your diaper, I inherently have so much more wisdom than you.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you're 40 years old, I remember when you were in diapers. I changed your diaper. You can't tell me anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's about as stupid as any series of words that could ever fall out of a big, dumb, empty head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no reason to accept that as having any kind of logical basis. But this is a very serious thing that affects siblings and affects the parent-child relationship.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that because that person... you know, because you saw them as a baby and you were already close to or an adult at the time, then now 40 years later, you have some kind of advantage. You may not.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, that person may have learned a lot more about things than you have.
Mm-hmm. Well, because life teaches different people different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea that all people have exact same life milestones at the exact same time. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and no one would even logically make that argument under normal circumstances.
Yeah.
And yet that's what this concept is based on.
Yeah. And also, you know, going back to the, if you wouldn't do it to your friends, why would you do it to your family?
Yeah.
There's this idea, you know, and this is seen in the Liberty Movement. How do I get my parents or how do I get my siblings to understand these ideas of liberty?
Right.
Well, you can't.
Right.
The answer is you can't.
Right.
You can't make anyone else understand anything ever.
It's pushing a rope again.
Yeah.
You can't push the rope. All you can do is lead your life.
Yeah. And if they're interested and if they want to come to you and ask questions, you can answer questions and you can provide material and you can say, hey, this is interesting. Take a look.
Mm-hmm.
But the second that you start getting pushy with anything,
yeah,
no matter how correct you think you are, no matter how righteous you think you are, you know, there's it's obnoxious for a vegan to sit there and attack a meat eater. It's obnoxious. It's obnoxious for a Christian to sit there and attack an atheist. It's obnoxious for a libertarian
or an atheist to attack a Christian.
Exactly.
You know, how stupid are you? You believe in imaginary little you're not going to convince them by doing that.
No. And you're not going to convince anybody anything that they don't want to be convinced of.
Yeah. Yeah, to all the vegans out there, when you say, I haven't tasted any meat in over 4 years, the average meat consumer will say, too bad on you. I'm having a hamburger. They don't care.
No, they don't care.
Your argument is invalid.
It's not impressive. The only people you're impressing are the people who are already on your side.
Yeah. Now, I'm a big supporter of the Socratic method of, you know, of talking to people. And so I will often ask someone a leading question for the purpose of either trying to get them to think about their current position or to try to get them to expose what they really believe so that others can see it. And the Socratic method is wonderful for doing that. But the thing of it is with the Socratic method is Socrates got himself killed over it.
Right.
I mean, that's what it invokes. It invokes anger very often.
Mm-hmm.
When you ask a person a question that causes them to self-examine, very often the result of that is anger or even hatred. So, yes, a Socratic method is wonderful. You go to a politician and you ask him publicly a question, and he exposes himself as a forked tongue, you know, a horrible individual that is possessed by the devil. And it's great YouTube, but it's not going to convince the fork-tongued devil to stop being a fork-tongued devil.
No,
devil
but that's
and
not going to work on
an anarchist.
You know, that's not going to work on your brother or your sister or your dad.
Yeah,
that's not going to work. That's going to make them really annoyed at you and not want to talk to you anymore.
Right.
And you know, if Penn Jillette talks about this, you know, he says if you think that the bus is coming. Then do whatever you have to do to get me out from in front of it.
Yeah.
You know, and if it means so much to you that you're willing to risk the relationship.
The perpetual hatred of that person.
Because you honestly feel like they have to know this, then, you know, but there are ways to go about it that are easier.
Yeah. Without just giving them a hard shove.
Yeah. And if they're constantly attacking you for your beliefs, you don't have to take that either.
No. Now we're into self-defense. They're fair game.
Yeah.
Unload on them. Because, you know, how would you treat your neighbor? How would you treat your coworker if they're doing the same thing? Well, just because somebody's your brother, your sister, or your parents, or your children, they're abusing you like that, you don't have any special obligation to them.
No, not at all.
They're another human being just like you. And if they can't treat you like a human being, then you have no obligation to treat them in any particular way. That's when the Socratic method becomes fun. Well, I think we're getting real close to our time frame, so we ought to wrap it up. Now, this has taken us into the early, like into the 20s or so. Now, we need to discuss in our future episodes on this about the more mature levels of family development and how and what levels of obligation we have with elderly parents and what levels of obligation elderly parents have to their sibling or to their children, mm-hmm. because, you know, there's this inheritance is one thing. Mm-hmm. There's this idea that the elderly parents owes something to their children for an inheritance. Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that, and we'll talk about it in future episodes.
We probably only have maybe one, maybe two, but yeah, probably one. Maybe two.
We might be able to stretch it out to two, according to how much we ramble.
Right.
Because you ramble a lot.
Yeah, I ramble. I'm the one with brain damage, and I'm the one who gets off topic. Uh-huh, sure.
Folks, for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, and on raising a non-aggressive family, go to badquaker.com. Thanks a lot, folks.